no less, before simply walking away. "Saucy bastard," Harm said. He hurried to catch up. To the north of Sunja's pit, placed seamlessly up against the wall of the arena, stood the building that housed the gladiatorial chamber. Like the arena, it was built of brick, stone, and heavy timbers, but it rose far above the highest seats and the walls of the pit, and it was rumored that the members of the chamber could actually see the matches from the highest points. Grey and white rock composed the outer shell of the five-story building, a row of six white marble columns, their bases too wide to embrace, rose up from street level to an overhang, offering protection from harsh summer rains if needed. Near the bottom, their surfaces were chiseled into scenes depicting small battling figures and ferocious animals. A pair of great oak doors, fashioned to fit an archway, lay just beyond the marble giants. Six scars stood on either side of the entryway, their backs against a wall cut with a scattering of windows fixed with closed wooden shutters. Each warrior carried sword, shield, and spear. Their visors remained fixed ahead, watching the pair of battered men as they drew closer and entered the shadow of the gladiatorial chamber. Chapter 6 Gol hobbled straight for the main doors, and Harm expected the scars to bar the Kree's way at any moment. Where it went from there, Harm only hoped they would be able to walk away. The city guard remained motionless even as Gol stopped and jerked his head towards the doors, indicating that Harm open it. The Jiberian did so, pushing them inwards and holding them open until Gol hopped past on his crutches. Even as Harm followed his companion inside the building, he expected someone to shout orders to throw them out. On the walls inside, intricate scratchings of arena battles adorned gleaming sheets of copper. The pictures faded into the height of the ceiling. Despite the shutters being closed, some of the higher windows allowed thin shafts of light to spear down and mark the walls at steep angles. Torches burned from wall sconces, and a black iron brazier dominated the middle of the foyer, burning some exotic incense that Harm didn't expect at all. It felt out of place. The area seemed more like a temple of sorts. Benches made from heavy wood with cracked surfaces spotted the floor in places, while six doors, some opened and some closed, ringed the walls at even intervals. A group of four men, two of whom sat on the benches, turned and eyed the newcomers. The two standing men, who faced Harm and Gol as they entered, watched them with expressions of disdain. They were well-built and casually dressed in light clothing, but there was no mistaking the ominous strength in their limbs. One of the sitting men, an older one, regarded them over his shoulder and then turned and took a closer look, before smiling smugly and showing his back once more. He spoke something to his companions, which caused the two standing to break into leers. Harm didn't like them from the start. Gol drew up on his crutches and studied the six doors. Officials moved past the open ones like pictures leaving their frames, carrying scrolls in and out of view or undertaking some unknown organizational tasks. Gol started for the nearest one, his crutches echoing in the vast foyer. Harm followed him. "Where one goes, the other follows." Harm heard quite clearly that time, and cast a frown in the direction of the foursome. The pair standing continued to eye him like meat gone bad, while the older one, wearing a light beard of grey, caught Harm's eye and winked at him. The Jiberian frowned once more, no longer liking the feel of the room. "You there?" Gol asked of a robed official as he passed from one room to the next. "Where might I find the chamber members? I wish to speak with them." Harm heard the four men chuckle behind him. The official, a middle-aged man losing his hair, stopped in his tracks and blinked at Gol.
"Are you supposed to be here this day?"
"No." This brought more chuckling from the men near the brazier. Harm half turned towards them and eased his hands to his hips in warning.
"Oh-ho, that one seems upset now."
Greybeard smiled slyly, his eyes cruel. He didn't look away from the Jiberian.
"Imagine that."
"You have to have an appointment to see the chamber," the official said dourly,
not hearing the men beyond. Gold didn't seem to hear him.
I wish to see them this day, if possible.
Another rash of snarky giggles came, with one man even snorting and shaking his head. Harm felt his blood rise, wondering what was so damned funny. Then it struck him like a thrown spear. The four were gladiators, gladiators that belonged to a house or school. They all wore swords, with the exception of Greybeard. The realization made Harm chew on one corner of his mouth, mulling dark thoughts.
That's impossible, the official said. Please ask.
Gaul kept on.
I just said it's impossible.
I'm asking you to ask.
You cannot simply enter and ask to see the chamber. There are rules, you know.
Really? And what are those? The official let out an exasperated sigh.
You need to schedule a meeting. I've just told you that. The chamber is very busy during the season.
Gaul screwed up his face as he took in the almost empty foyer.
Well, I'm asking for a meeting now. You can't have a meeting on the same day.
Why not?
The official rolled his eyes. It isn't done that way.
Perhaps it should be done that way. More scalding snickers came from behind. The evil smile on Greybeard stretched even farther, and he leaned in the direction of Gaul, finding great amusement in the conversation, and sadly shaking his head. He nodded to Gaul but directed his words to Harm.
Your man is persistent.
I'll give him that. Harm wanly smiled back. He was tired of these bastards already.
In your hole, old tit.
The startled look on Greybeard's once smug features pleased Harm immensely.
Look.
Gaul struggled forwards on his crutches, speaking in a low voice. Harm's attention became wholly centered on Greybeard and his men.
You've got a smart mouth, dog.
Greybeard's unpleasant smile returned. The last man to speak to me in such a tone disappeared.
Probably went looking for your mother.
Harm bared his own unpleasant smile.
If she shat out a pup like you, best for all concerned to sew the hole shut before anything else dropped out.
The men about Greybeard became visibly tense, but the old one, their leader, Harm assumed, smiled on.
At least I know my mother.
Greybeard came back, leering.
You're a right happy topper, aren't you?
Harm immediately fired.
Why is that, I wonder? Unfit in the head, are you? Simple-minded?
Simple enough to.
Because,
Harm spoke over Greybeard, seeing the man's mouth quivering at the corners.
I pity simple-minded idiots like yourself. Truly. I see you have 3 punces to walk you around. That's a good thing. Which one cleans your ass, hm? Or do you just leave it in the street when the urge takes you? Just like a cow kiss.
Greybeard's face twisted in on itself. His companions were all ready to pounce now, and for the first time, Harm saw just how large they were, and powerful looking. The brute that had been sitting next to Greybeard even had an eye patch draped across his left socket. Though he didn't show it, Harm winced at the fact that he had left his blade with the leather maker.
You've got a sharp tongue, youngster.
Greybeard seethed. Not as sharp as yours, I wager, to service the ass cracks of those 3 around you.
You must pull it out once in a while. Why else are they just standing there, huh? How much do you charge them a go, or is it free all round?
Greybeard stood up, a storm cloud rising amongst thick hills. Harm smirked. He knew bare bones when he fastened onto them, and he had riled these men, but good.
You have a problem,
Greybeard said, suppressed anger in his voice.
I know you. I watched you fight just yesterday. I know you very well. And with that gut and that ugly mouth, it won't be much trouble for me to find out your name. And when I do, Harm of Jarberia,
Harm blurted with a genuine chuckle.
And here I am.
He threw his arms wide. Gaul suddenly appeared on his right and edged around him, a dark look on his features, yet curious as to what was going on.
Harm of Jarberia,
Greybeard cackled, throwing back his head.
That's right. Now I remember. You're Jarberian. You Jarberians know all about tonguing asses, and here I was almost getting annoyed with you. You there, cripple, why don't you place your animal on a leash, eh? And drag him back to the forest you found him in. Gold said nothing, but his skull was a step away from what Harm thought was something very dangerous. Nothing to say. Your boy speaks for you. Gold kept silent, releasing his pent-up air in a huff. With it, his expression relaxed. Ah, the intelligent one. Greybeard nodded. I'll be watching for you. It'll cost you more than a gold coin to avert my eye elsewhere. I'm not as easy to persuade as that one you paid just a moment ago. Ignoring him, Gold limped to a nearby bench and sat on it. Once comfortable, he gazed at Greybeard and then back to Harm as if wondering how far this exchange was going to go. Harm wondered the same thing. Then he noticed the officials standing in their respective doorways with their pensive expressions. Greybeard abruptly saw them as well, and shook his head. He wagged a finger at Gol, quietly appreciating the man's tact and understanding him for the first time. You are the smart one, Greybeard said in a sly tone, and looked back and forth between the two. I'll keep an eye on you both, especially you, Jiberian. Oh, God, my ass! Harm smiled back with a flick of his chin. With that, he showed them his broad back and stepped in front of Gol. Confident he couldn't be seen, Harm lapsed into an expression of amazement and rolled his eyes. Gol showed no indication of having noticed. And together, they waited in the simmering silence of the room, broken once and again by the soft murmurs and giggling of Greybeard and his men. Well? Harm asked Gol softly. We wait. The Cree stared off at a copper wall. Harm paused for more, and when it didn't come, he sat on a bench with his back to the others and resigned himself to getting comfortable. Greybeard and his boys continued muttering, deep mewlings that Harm found as evil-sounding as axe heads being dragged over quarried stone. Much later, an official appeared and called the four men. They rose and entered the room just ahead of them, disappearing behind a set of double doors. Broken from his trance of boredom, Harm glanced over his shoulder just as the doors were closing. As soon as the men were gone, he leaned towards Gol. Those were gladiators. I saw that. A right proper unpleasant bunch at that. Gol's head dipped to one shoulder in an I suppose so reply. Why didn't you say anything back there? Harm asked. And add more wood to the fire. Gol challenged. Do you really want to be forever looking over your back from this day forth? These are my first games, but even I've heard stories of house-fighters hunting down free-trained outside of the pit and pounding them into dirt. I'd say you might have to be careful from here on. Harm reflected on that. It was just his nature to throw back insults and give as good as he got, or at least to try his damnedest to piss off the offenders. I wasn't about to hold my tongue and say nothing to that brazen topper. Not here. And not with him. Well, you got his attention, Gol assured him. I'm pretty certain I'm fine, being seen as a cripple and all. But I think you are well and truly fish-hooked. I mean, truly fish-hooked. No sense in me being brutalized as well, or outright killed. Harm became pensive, thinking on the three brutes accompanying Greybeard. Well, perhaps. Another head dip from Gol. Just perhaps. They lapsed into silence then and waited some more. Why are you fighting in these games? Gol eventually asked him, his voice respectful of the place they were in. Harm had been sizing up the pictures on the wall, the lines almost indistinct from where he sat. Coin? Nothing else. Well, no, not really. Was always good with a blade. Didn't take to anything else. Every season I could count on fighting in one or three matches, win some gold, not good enough to carry on through, but I'd win enough to get me over to something else, or win enough to get me through to the next season of fights. I'd train here and there, practice my swing and shield work on wooden posts or whatever. If I got put out early, I'd get into a bit of mercenary business but stay away from wars.
I was always able to find work bodyguarding merchants, that sort of thing. Harm stopped then and thought. Not counting on getting old is what I mean. In the copper gleam of the room, Gol's profile tightened.
Why did you enter?
Harm asked. To win, the Cree replied simply. Yet all business. All of it. The stark truth of the answer made Harm shift uncomfortably. Time dragged then, until the perfumed air from the burning incense became much too sweet, and made Harm clear his throat or cough every so often. Officials sometimes appeared in doorways and crossed the floor, only to vanish behind other doors. Sometimes the balding man appeared and eyed them as if they were a nuisance. The others did not, or at least they had the sense to ignore the two fighters. They sat and waited. Harm continued his dreary appraisal of the pictures on the walls while Gol hardly moved at all. Finally, the double doors before them clicked and opened, and the four men walked out. Greybeard looked straight at Gol, and then Harm. To the Jiberian, he lifted a finger to his eye and tapped it, smiling tightly and giving him a wink. That one gesture rankled Harm, and he scowled at the lot as they walked by him. If Harm and Gol had sat any closer to the outside of the benches, no doubt a kick or a shove would have been delivered by one or all of the four men. As it was, dirty looks flashed in their direction, and the glare of the one-eyed guard in particular needled Harm. An unspoken threat, if ever the Jiberian had seen one. They walked past and exited the building.
Pricks, Harm said under his breath. I agree.
Gol threw in. That one-eyed bastard gave me the look.
Did he?
I that? Have to be on the watch for him there?
Well, no surprise there. Not after the words from earlier.
No, suppose not. There was nothing else to talk about from then on, as Harm chewed on the inside of his mouth, and saw Greybeard's smiling face and the one-eyed fighter in his mind's eye. He reluctantly admitted he might have a problem there.
How long do you think we'll have to wait?
Harm whispered. Until they see us.
Did you really slip a coin to that topper?
Gol nodded.
That might not work.
I think it will.
Gol's hands strayed to his crutches.
Because if it doesn't, we'll find that very same man who took my money and get it back. What do you say to that?
It was something Harm could understand.
I can help with that.
Good.
Harm hoped they would see the chamber members soon. Pressure was building in his bladder, and there were fights to make money off. He couldn't ignore either for long. Chapter 7 Men called him Sapo, which in Sunjan meant hill. He didn't think it a good name, but recognized it as readily as his real name these days. He'd grown up swinging an axe and lugging fallen timbers over his shoulder. As he grew, the bigger the tree trunks he carried, and the more power he got behind his axe. Somewhere along the expanding border of Norden, he got into a fight with a lone Nordish warrior, and split open his head with one swipe of his axe. Delighted with the kill of an invader, he ran home to inform his parents, only to find they had already been killed by three other Nordish soldiers. What happened after that was something he could no longer exactly recall, but he remembered coming out of a frenzy and standing amongst the hacked and unmoving bodies of the Nords. He was 16 at the time. He traded in his wood axe for one properly suited for battle. His frame grew and expanded, and more muscle clung to his bones. He found work as a private killer of animals and men alike for Sunja's merchants, realizing early on that fighting the Nords, while satisfying, wouldn't be as profitable. A mercenary captain by the name of Basu took him under his wing for a while, training him in the basics of sword and axe fighting, until an arrow from a desert horseman took his life. Seeing as the wild surrounding Sunja could be an unpredictable place at best, yet not wanting to give up the skills he was sharpening, he had decided to do something a little more controlled. Now 20, he entered his first season in the games as a free trained. Standing before the portcullis and hearing the swelling energy of the crowd above, he was aware of the gatekeeper nearby, but paid the old man little attention. Slabs of plate armor hung off his person. Heavy armor, but he wore it just as easily as a man wearing leather. His arms were bare, as he couldn't find anything to cover them other than the spiked metal gauntlets, and those only came halfway down his forearms. His biceps were also mostly bare except for leather tiles worn as short sleeves that hung off his shoulders and protected only the upper part. His breathing sounded like the gasp of bellows, and he stared out at the world through a helmet that protected his cheeks and the rest of his head, but left his mouth, nose, and eyes uncovered in a T. He thought of his dying parents, and just about any bad thing that had ever happened to him. Hate, fear, anger, faces of men and women who had been stupid enough to challenge or taunt him. Sometimes, the drunkest people sought to fight him for no other reason than he was the biggest around at the time. The anger welled up inside him, bursting from a nugget deep inside, and powered his limbs until his very chest seemed to burst with it. He heard the orator call his name, and the portcullis opened to a slow cadence, sunlight dappling his mighty form. Gripping his battle axe, the enraged Sappho rushed up the steps and outside, seeking to smash whoever was before him. His fingers flexed on his broadsword, and he rolled the shoulder and arm carrying his shield. Vwil Gore took a deep, calming breath, and opened his mouth as wide as possible, feeling his jaw pop. Tall and muscular, with a deep chest and meaty shoulders, he carried the armor like a second skin, and didn't feel the pot helm at all. It was his third season in the games, and he hoped to go farther than last year. Last year, he'd only made it to the second round, when he was knocked out and spared by a club-wielding countryman from northern Sunja, somewhere on the border with Marn. A troll hunter by profession, Vwil had the opinion that his trade was becoming increasingly dangerous. There weren't too many men who wanted to see a troll these days, let alone hunt one down and slay it. It was work for Vwil, something he'd spent 4 years doing in between fighting in the pit. The money was better in the games, as he could wager on himself, in addition to any gold won, and he was beginning to prefer seeing who he fought on open sands, instead of dark, unknown terrain of any type, where a troll's claw might take one's head off in one quick swipe. With his group of hunters, he'd killed 6 trolls total. He didn't fear the beasts, but it was wise to maintain a healthy dose of respect. The monsters were huge, towering over men, and immensely powerful. In the arena, he'd run up a record of 5 victories and 3 losses. The losses didn't bother him, but they had prevented him from advancing further in the tournament and thus earning more money. Gold was everything to him, to his family. His wife wanted him home more often, becoming increasingly worried about him risking his life in the troll-hunting trade. The games didn't suit her tastes either, but as Vwil reasoned, at least he could plead mercy with a pit-fighter. His 2 daughters wanted him home as well. Only 4 and 3, they were as pretty as their mother, and Vwil adored them. All he needed was perhaps 2 more seasons in the games and at the hunting. He'd have enough then to purchase a parcel of farmland. Thereafter, he intended to switch from trolls to something a little more manageable. Wild boars, or rabbits, perhaps. If times became tough, he might be persuaded to do a little bounty hunting for the occasional escaped prisoner. He just needed 2 more seasons and the potential gold that came with it. As the portcullis came up, Vwil looked up and saw Blue framed in a stone archway at the end of the white tunnel. The orator cried out his name, and he inspected his shiny mail shirt and tapped his pot helm with his sword. As always, before any fight or confrontation with a troll, he took a deep breath, wiping away any fear as effectively as a rag dusting off a tabletop. After years of hunting down trolls, not much bothered him anymore. His thoughts on cutting down whoever opposed him on the arena sands, Vwil Gore strode towards the light. The sound of the crowds raked over him like beach rocks rattled by a retreating surf. He didn't look at the people, but listened for the order to begin while sizing up the brute across the way from him. Vwil saw a man the height of himself, but larger. Plate armor covered most of his body, with the exception of parts of his arms. Greaves protected his legs. The battle axe was different, however. Not many used the heavy weapon. and Vuil could see that the man's gauntlets were spiked. He'd have to be wary of those. The thing that caught Vuil's attention was the shaking of his opponent. The pit fighter quivered in place, head trembling, shoulders heaving. He was even stomping on the sands like a bull about to charge. The crowds took notice as well and cheered. They sensed blood in the air. Vuil sensed it too. He'd left the wilds and hunting trolls, only to find one in the arena. Bright Seddon obviously had a plan, but Vuil had no idea what it might be.
"Let the match begin!"
Vuil brought up his sword and shield, settling into a guard position as he moved forwards across the sands. The one called Sappho came head-on, walking briskly and soon reaching the middle of the arena. Some trainers urged their fighters to take the middle ground quickly, in order to maintain a wide range of movement from the center and to prevent their foes from trapping them against a wall. Sappho broke into a jog now. The crowd's cheers grew louder. Vuil shook his head. A troll, indeed, armored and swinging an axe. Seddon above. He got behind his shield and tensed to move, already anticipating cutting the legs out from the oncoming brute. The last few feet separating them, Sappho roared and charged, sweeping his axe up over his shoulder. But Vuil wasn't standing in the same place. With practiced ease, the troll hunter stepped out of the way of the oncoming mass. With deadly intent, he sliced his sword across both knees of Sappho, feeling the clang of metal on metal. Vuil spun as he felt his blade rasp across the greaves, knowing he'd missed. What he didn't expect was Sappho's speed. Vuil saw the battle axe, blurred and double-bladed, slicing for his head. He ducked reflexively, but Sappho's fist slammed into his head, torquing it to the left and bringing black motes before his eyes. Sappho bellowed and thrust with the head of his axe, punching the off-balanced Vuil square in the chest and knocking him to the ground. After that, nothing really mattered. The one called Sappho hacked at the fallen Vuil and the crumpled metal of his helm, squashing the flesh still inside, all to the delight of the watching crowds. Grunting as if unhinged, Sappho continued hewing at the body in bloody arcs. A sword arm was taken off above the elbow. A foot jumped into the air, then a leg. The head sprang from the man's shoulders with one mighty chop after Sappho realized he hadn't completed the job the first time around. Three startling strikes to the armored torso of Vuil mashed the dead pit fighter into the sands. Only then did Sappho step back from his work and spread his arms in a V above his head. A scream of unbridled fury exploded from the man's throat, stabbing through the noise made by the onlookers. Men and women applauded in awe of the short but blood-drenched spectacle. Then, realizing there was no one to fight, Sappho caught his axe mid-shaft and marched back to the opening portcullis, leaving the people marveling over the almost elemental power the man possessed. The storm that was Sappho appeared, killed his opponent, and having done that, wanted out of the pit as soon as possible. It was over much too quickly, but only after Sappho disappeared did the crowds wish for more. High above it all, the orator approved. The day had started out piss poor, but it was shaping up nicely all the same. Chapter 8. After winning his fight, Pignot went and unloaded his weapons and armor at the feet of the quartermaster, either letting items drop or stripping them off as if they were diseased. He didn't impress the quartermaster, who took the equipment with a frown. Pignot knew he couldn't have seen the match, so he just believed the man was being a dog blossom. Pignot wanted nothing more to do with the pit, and only wanted to be free of it. Fighting was over for him. There were better things for him to do. His clothes stained and smelling of sweat, sour wine, and even fear, Pignot poured at them as he made his way from the general quarters of the pit, avoiding the stares of the fighters there. From the corner of his eye, he saw three men pulling the body cart, which he knew was full, by his hand. He stopped for a moment, watching the cart turn to wheel away from him, heading down a side tunnel to the fire pit, which would make short work of the remains. Pignot stared until they were out of sight. Later, he collected his winnings, 20 gold coins, from the paymaster, who eyed him distastefully from behind a barred window. 4 scars stood ready on either side, their backs to the wall and facing the fighter or any rising threat. In the disgusted mood he was in, Pignot actually considered starting a fight just to see if one of them might kill him, ending it all. He'd take it as a favor. Snatching his money from the paymaster, Pignot walked away from the window and climbed the stairs back into the light. The sun struck him with its heat when he exited the gate of the moon, and for a moment, Pignot thought about what it must be like to perish in a fire. He pushed for the domes, got caught up in the crowds pressing into the arena, and remembered he had never wagered on himself in the first place. That stopped him in his tracks, and he stood there, a rock in a river of people, with his hands on his hips and staring at the dusty ground between his feet. It wasn't proving to be a good day. It was his fault he had still been half drunk when he fought, but he hadn't expected to face another drunkard. He didn't mean to kill him either, but what was done was done. He made a fist about the small leather pouch full of gold and decided that if he'd won it, he might as well make use of it, no matter how foul it felt. But that was just now. Pignot knew that after a few pitchers of sunken gold, the mire he felt he wallowed in would fall away. Mire. Bathhouse. That was a right proper thought. Not wanting company in the least, Pignot wandered past an open stall where a merchant sold wine by the clay bottle. "Give me 2 of those," he told the merchant, a much smaller man than himself, escaping the sun by selling his wares underneath a wide canopy. He handed over the 2 bottles as asked. "How much?" Pignot asked.
2 gold.
2 gold. Gold. Pignot spat as he dug out the coins. "That's what I dislike about Sonja. These," he held up the coins, "are only pieces here. The land to the north call them talons. Something, eh? Sounds respectable. Valuable. And to the south, they're called cutaros, Strikes me as something cultured. Here, what do we call them? The most uninspired, boring, laziest thing we could think of. Pieces. Shite comes in pieces. Said in above. Here." He slapped the coins down into the merchant's waiting hand. No sooner had he done that than he placed 1 bottle on the counter between them. The cork came out with a twist, and Pignot took a deep, mind-numbing pull of the bottle, holding it up and letting it empty into him as if it were the best thing in his life. Or in his day, at least. The merchant watched him with unimpressed eyes. Pignot finished the wine with a gasp and left the bottle on the counter. He snatched the other one, popped the cork, and walked towards the bathhouse. For 2 gold pieces, he knew he could lounge in a public bath and relax until the sun dropped from the sky. He meant to drink as well, and get his clothes washed and aired. If one could find a bench near the pool, sleeping was perfectly acceptable. The more he thought of the warm waters, the more he wanted them. They might even wash away what he was feeling. They certainly couldn't do any wrong. People crowded over the flat and rectangular quarried stone paving the streets. Pignot got through them all with the help of the 2nd bottle and a forced smile. By the time he reached the bathhouse, the 2nd bottle was gone, and he deposited the empty container into the hands of the attendant who took his gold in the main foyer. 2 levels of carefully wrought stone, brick and marble, with below-ground piping and heating systems, Sunja's public bathhouses were a relaxing delight for anyone who had the coin. Thick coils of steam issued from the archway and floated through cracked open windows constructed in regular intervals in the outer stonework. Long grey bandages of mortar, freshly applied, gummed up cracks in the building shell. "Any wine here?" Pignot asked gruffly, staring at one long tributary running almost the height of the wall. The attendant, a younger man with a stick-like physique, blinked. "Some. Bring me 2 bottles of anything, and I'll pay you extra." The fellow nodded, summoned yet another man from a side room, informed him of what to do, and sent him off.
The first attendant then handed Pignot some rough towels. He took them without comment and proceeded into the steam. The bathhouse. For a fee, any commoner could lavish in coarse opulence. Just breathing the hot air lifted his weary and sickened spirits. Pignot kicked off his boots in a side chamber lined with tiers of open lockers containing the outerwear of the current bathers. He chose a locker, stripped, and proceeded to the baths through veils of billowing steam, holding his towels. The marble flooring was moist and warm to his bare feet as he made his way to the bathing chambers. There he chose one of many large barrels filled with hot water and climbed in, submerging himself to his armpits. He scrubbed away the stink of the previous night and early afternoon with a washcloth and a cheap bar of scented soap. An attendant asked him if he wanted a woman or a man to massage him, but he turned down both. Anything beyond washing up would cost extra, and Pignot felt he should try to be conservative, even though he knew he would spend his winnings before they burned through the bottom of his pouch. Once clean, he left the bathing chamber and its smells of soap and water, and padded into the main heated pool. Overhead, a white ceiling was topped off with a glass dome that seemed in need of a scrubbing itself. Frolicking dolphins decorated the glass, while near the corners of the ceiling were dark, shuttered vents, which could be opened if needed. Flat white rock, chipped and fashioned into irregular shapes and wet from footprints, ringed a huge oval pool lined with marble that turned the water into a pleasant shade of turquoise. Steam rose from waters that rippled and lapped up against the pool's edges. Men relaxed in the water up to their chins, some appearing as mossy rocks, while others' bald heads glistened. Pignot made his way to the steps and waded in, the depths hot enough to make him wince. He found a spot near the far end of the pool and caused ripples as he forded towards it. He didn't care who he pissed off by making waves. It was that kind of day. He reached his spot and sat down, feeling his backside touch a smooth marble ledge. Heat. Heat soaked into his frame and took away his aches. He sputtered water, laid his head against the pool's edge, and closed his eyes. An attendant found him moments later and placed two bottles of wine near his head, informing him they were there in a whisper, so as not to disturb the other bathers. Pignot grunted, and that was that. His skin tingling and adapting to the heat engulfing him, Pignot sighed contentedly and let the subtle lapping of water rock him into a doze. The wine waited for him, and he thirsted for it, but the pool was a seductive decadence that slowed time. Steaming water rose just above his chin, summoning sweat from his opening pores. He was only distantly aware of someone sloshing down nearby, the ripples pushing the waterline above his lips. Voices, just a touch louder than a whisper, made him wrinkle his face at the intrusion. Public pools. If he could afford it, he would have paid to have one of the private tubs, away from the main one.
Ah, oh, good,
a voice rasped.
Just the thing.
The sound of it disturbed Pignot, and he mulled moving.
Don't be sloshing the water about your pants. There are other people about,
the same voice said.
Apologies, Toffer, said another. Just be glad Bar-Bar isn't here. Can you imagine him? Dying, sitting. He'd be like a sick horse thrashing.
Aye, that. The wrinkles about Pignot's closed eyes deepened. It seemed there would be no peace for him at all this day.
Do you remember the time Bar-Bar?
Why don't you boys be quiet? Pignot asked, not bothering to open his eyes, or at least try to whisper. The silence that answered him made him feel better. He'd gotten his point across.
The pants wants quiet,
a low voice growled to his right, the one belonging to Toffer.
Maybe we should make it quiet for him,
another asked.
Sounds like an idea,
yet another voice said, this one coming from his left. Three of them, all surly sounding. That made Pignot open his eyes. Then he saw the fourth man, and all of them, two on either side, appeared none too friendly. They hunched forward like a band of crocodiles about to snap and drag him under the surface. Pignot took in the threatening faces to his right, then his left. Perhaps one was as large as he, but the four of them all at once was far from favourable odds. Still, he was having that kind of day, so he decided to try hard to not show any fear. Amongst dogs like these, fear would be deadly.
Just the four of you. Thought there were more. Enough to slap you about, son,
one snarled. He had a mouth full of broken teeth.
As if I haven't been slapped around enough already,
Pignot thought. You want to fight me? Sign up at the pit as a free trained and we'll have at it. At least there we'll get some coin out of it. One of us will, anyway. That quieted them all.
You a pit fighter?
The one called Toffer asked. Flecks of grey coloured his temples, while the rest of his hair was short, cropped and black. His eyes looked ancient, however.
Aye, that. Any good?
Pignot frowned. I can fight.
But are you any good, I asked.
I won my match this afternoon.
Which one was that?
The first one. The men exchanged glances.
You were the ball licker that killed that other pisser?
Asked the one with the broken fangs. That hurt.
Aye, that.
Pignot groaned quietly. That was a disgrace of a fight, said another.
Saw it. You both were begging to be ball-slapped. Should have both died in my eyes. Terrible. It was a bad fight,
Pignot agreed.
It wasn't bad, it was shite, said the brute with the teeth.
Seen worse,
mumbled the quietest of the four.
The boys are right,
Toffer said, eyeing Pignot.
I don't know what you were thinking, but that was a poor performance, and every last soul in the pit knew it. I'm not so angry myself. I had coin on you, so I'm happy.
By you?
He smiled evilly and indicated the wine.
I guess I'd be doing the same. Only more.
A lot more, said the largest of the four.
Enough to go blind, said Broken Teeth.
How long you been doing this?
Toffer asked. Too long. That admission made Toffer smirk.
What's your name?
Pignot groaned inwardly. He should never have come to this place. He didn't have to give his name to these men, but he certainly didn't want the fight that would probably start otherwise.
Pignot,
he muttered in the end.
Well, Pignot, I'll tell you what. Just because you made me some coin this morning, and only because of that,
I'll let you go about your day as though it were any other. Let you drink as much wine or ale or whatever as you want, to see if you can't wash away that taste of shite in your mouth, which you're no doubt tasting.
My thanks,
Pignot said dryly. Toffer spread his hands in a don't-mention-it gesture, and then spoke to the others.
There it is, lads, to the other end of the pool. Let the man relax.
Like famished animals denied a meal, the three other warriors eyed Pignot reproachfully, making it very clear what they wanted to do to him. But Pignot closed his eyes and tried hard to appear unbothered. The sounds of them wading away, making waves, diminished in his darkness. Toffer's voice cut through when he ordered someone at the other end of the bath to move. Pignot didn't hear any protest. He cracked an eye and saw the steam made the far-off figures appear smoky, and that suited him just fine. With one hand, he carefully reached up behind him and felt the curve of a bottle. He brought it back down, chewed out the cork, and drank until a third of the wine was gone. Toffer sat and thought about the name of the fighter at the other end of the pool. He silenced the killers about him with a glance, not wanting their prattle to disturb him. There was opportunity here, and perhaps more than what Clades had given. All that was needed was to think of a way to go about it. He always did when it mattered the most. Chapter 9. The light in the foyer dimmed at an eternally torturous pace. When the bench became too much, Harm got up and walked around the room, sizing up the pictures etched upon the copper walls. Most were fights from the earlier days of the pit, a time he didn't know. Some scenes depicted warriors battling beasts of war. One picture in particular caught his attention, that of a single fighter standing alone on a field awash in ruins of flesh, armor, and weapons. A grim feeling of satisfaction seized Harm. For him, that one image encapsulated the spirit of the games. When he tired of the images, he tried to engage Goal in conversation. The man from Cree didn't feel the same way, only responding directly to questions, keeping his answers short, if longer than a grunt, and never offering an opinion. After a while, Harm simply gave up. Goal had things on his mind and couldn't be bothered. The Jiberian then wondered if Goal's ass was getting sore from sitting on the bench for so long. He didn't dare ask him. He was still just learning what was acceptable to the Cree. Pignot was different. Harm and the Sunjan joked all the time, and he knew what he could say to the man and what he couldn't. Pignot knew him as well. Maluk, Harm thought, also had a sense of humour, which was good. Gold didn't appear to have much of a sense of humour. If he did, he kept it choked off like a pisser's flow. They waited long enough to see attendants come and go, as well as other well-dressed individuals, some of which Harm thought to be owners of lesser gladiatorial houses. They all entered and exited the inner doors, which led to the chamber members. At times, the doors would open, and Harm looked up expectantly, knowing that this would be time to leave the foyer. The attendants, leaving the room, paid them no heed, however, and left both men to continue simmering like forgotten pots over a fire pit. It was only when Harm thought about suggesting they leave and come back the next day that the door opened, and the attendant Goal had spoken with earlier motioned them to enter. Goal struggled to his feet. Harm waited until he was ready and followed him in. He had no desire to speak with anyone of note. He had no tongue for it. The gladiatorial chamber was uninspiring. After such a long wait, the drab stone walls, set behind a semicircular panel of red wood and raised above a cream-colour marble floor, disappointed Harm, especially after the rousing ambience of the entry foyer. The chamber members sat behind the elevated panel and gazed down at them, appearing just as weary and hard as Harm's ass. Goal moved along on his crutches to a waist-high table, where visitors stopped and addressed the chamber members. There, he stood and regarded the nine men in turn. They were clothed in robes of gold and white, and appeared quite regal. Some of them were balding, while some had full heads of hair, or beards leaking grey. Harm stepped up behind the Cree and stayed off to one side, within arm's reach in case Goal fell over. Not that he expected the Slayer of Baelus to do so. He turned halfway around and eyed the attendant standing near the doors behind them all. He also made note of the six scars against the walls. He always made a point to know where everyone was in a room. "Chamber members," Goal spoke in Sunjan with a slight accent. "Thank you for granting me this moment to speak with you. I will not take much of your time. My companion and I have business to discuss with you all." This was answered with silence and eyes that glowered back. Harm secretly prayed to Seddon that the Cree would be brief. The chamber members possessed a venerable fierceness about them. If Goal did take too much time, they'd probably give the scars the word to remove them both from the room, forcefully, if needed. "Don't prattle on," Harm willed into Goal, hoping he picked up the thought. "I am from Cree, and I have trained with the weapon masters there to compete in Sunja's tournament of arms. I'm with no house in Sunja. My companion also belongs to no such house. In your eyes, we are free, trained gladiators, trained by unrecognized men, and have freely chosen to enter the games. Our skill is questionable, as are our reasons for being in the arena, but our hearts are strong. What I wish to do this day is create my own house, my own stable, made up of free, trained pit fighters who wish to rise above their station, their class, and become fully backed fighters seeking the ring of the arena, the title of champion. To do this, I must have your approval, and I'm willing to do what is necessary for my vision to become reality. What is it I have to do?" Silence. Long, uncomfortable silence, as the men sat above them regarded them as talking oddities. Harm looked from Gold to the chamber members and craned his neck to check on the scars.
"You say your name is Gold,"
the voice of one of the men finally rumbled, startlingly loud in the stillness.
"I am. And you're from the Weapon Masters of Kree?"
"I am."
The speaker leaned back in his chair. His hair and beard were cut short, but grey, and Harm suspected him to be the oldest. He also saw the man's right ear was missing. The Jiberian wondered if he ever got the sensation it was still there.
"I visited the Weapon Masters of Kree several years ago," the speaker said. "Watched them train about 30 of their whelps. I wasn't impressed."
Gol's back stiffened ever so slightly.
"But I'm not surprised one of their hellpups has made it to our games to participate, to try their luck. I wonder what your masters would say if they knew you were here, bowing down to us, asking for permission to establish a foothold in Great Sunjar. That amuses me. You've put a smile on my face this day, and given my companions quite the subject for conversation once you're gone."
Harm didn't think that sounded so good. One Ear paused for a moment and sized up the Kree before him. The other members leaned in like jackals waiting for a bite of something taken down by the pack leader.
"I know what they would say. The Weapon Masters of Kree would choke if they saw you now, here, asking for such a thing. It's not their way to do things."
One Ear cleared his throat with effort, his face turning somewhat red. He smirked then, baring teeth that lit up half of his grizzled features in a sour light.
"Yes, they would paddle your balls, I imagine, if they knew you intended to do such a thing. You see, I know those men. I know their arrogance. If you were sent here, you were probably sent with their blessings of war, expected to dazzle us all with your skills, no doubt expected to win it all. Looks to me that you had the shite pounded out of you on the first try. Imagine that, a disciple of the Weapon Masters of Kree being beaten, being punished, so soundly."
The rest of the chamber members smiled in contempt.
"I wasn't defeated," Gol said quietly. "From here?"
One Ear stretched out an arm.
"It looks you were. I killed Baylus the Butcher." "Ah, I saw that match." "Yes, I did. Well fought."
The sarcasm dripped and scalded.
"Well, with the fighting season only lasting 2 months, I think it's safe to say you're eliminated from champion contention, Weapon Master."
Harm raised his chin. Old One Ear did not think much of the fabled group of taskmasters and trainers from Kree.
"What is it you're taught, hm?"
One Ear cleared his throat once more.
"When faced with defeat, do the unexpected. Well, this certainly is the unexpected. Rousing the rabble underfoot, inciting the goody. What is it you hope to achieve by doing this?"
"To offer a place for any free trained to ply their skills, like a regular school."
One Ear smirked and shook his head.
"I don't think so. That's what you're telling me, and that brute next to you. But I don't believe you. You see, I learned a bit about the Weapon Master's art of deception."
One Ear held up an open hand and fluttered it.
"See? This is dangerous, this one here. Pay no mind to this,"
he said as he raised his left fist. "The trouble with the Weapon Masters is that they believe their tricks are still new, still magic.
They're not.
The world has moved on.
Learned."
One Ear leaned back and studied Gol then, searching his face and thinking deeply.
"No matter to me," he finally said. "You wish to establish a house here? A stable? I'll recommend to my esteemed companions here to accept your request."
One by one, the other chamber members nodded. One Ear cleared his throat again, making a horrible noise that even made Harm feel a twinge of disgust.
"I see it's unanimous.
You have the gladiatorial chamber's permission to start your house.
Gaul smiled.
On condition...
One Ear raised his rattling voice, as if he badly wanted to cough.
On condition that you pay the fee to register your house. Pay the fee and you may hang your flag, so to speak. Whoever you have under your name may continue fighting as a gladiator representing your house, provided he has not been eliminated. If he has, well, any additional fights taken are non-tournament matches. Good practice, but just as deadly. Those are the terms, though it's quite unusual to set up a school during a season. Quite unusual.
How much do you want?
Gaul asked stoically. 1,000 gold,
One Ear said, saying it as if it were no great sum. It was great enough to make Harm widen his eyes in disbelief.
1,000,
Gaul repeated. Anything else?
One Ear shook his head, suppressing a cough.
I may bring it to you any time.
Any time. I doubt your weapon masters are so lenient.
Gaul appeared to think it over.
Then we are done. Thank you for hearing us.
One Ear dismissed them with a hand as if it were nothing. Harm felt as if he had been paddled by a maul. 1,000 gold to enter the games as a house. Games that had already started? That amount of coin would give him a new life anywhere but here. All that money just to be recognized as a...
Gaul turned about and briefly met his eyes, indicating it was time to leave.
Harm kept quiet, but he swore he heard the low rumblings of laughter on their way out, and the doors were closed behind them. Not even the chamber thought it possible to get that amount of coin. Not amongst free, trained warriors. By the time they got outside, Harm couldn't believe he'd kept his dismay suppressed. Every step away from the chamber seemed to increase the disbelief of what had to be done just to be recognized amongst the other houses. The nearby arena was silent. The fight's done for the day, yet some people still hung about the walls.
Gaul said nothing to Harm, seemingly content to just lead him into the milling crowds of the streets.
Harm waited for something from the man, feeling it wasn't prudent to speak while still so close to the chamber building, but as they walked deeper into the crowds, away from general quarters, Harm's impatience swelled until it nearly burst.
Wait!
He made Gaul stop on his crutches.
What are you going to do now?
Gaul studied him for a moment.
We have work to do.
What?
We have to get that coin for the chamber.
You can't do it.
Gaul's eyes narrowed. I can do anything.
You heard them. They don't expect anything from a group of free, trained fighters. They certainly don't expect much from me. We're all beneath them. Nothing more than children playing at something meant for men. Well... we're going to prove them wrong. So very wrong. We're going to get what they want, and more. And you'll be there to see their faces drop.
You're unfit!
Harm was horrified by what he was hearing.
In the head!
Not at all. I'm determined. I'm going to bring back that fee, and watch that one-eared bastard choke on his tongue. I've already told you what I intended to do.
Why are you doubting me now?
Harm stood and stared.
It's the gold.
The gold is nothing. I can have that in... He thought about it. 1 or 2 weeks. No more than 2.
You are unfit. Where are you going to get it?
Where do you think? Come now, Harm. Think for a moment. Where can I get that amount of coin? Certainly not from winning my matches, and I won't steal it. So where? Harm thought about it. The only place that came to mind.
You mean to gamble?
He muttered in disbelief.
The deuce of Simon's balls! I'll have no part of that.
Listen to me, Gaul insisted, leaning in close and glancing around. Listen, I'm going to gamble with my coin, not yours. So rest easy on that. If you want to throw in, that's your decision. I'm already working on building up our pot. There's no magic involved. It's just a study of the fighters before they step out onto the sands, knowing their history, their opponents, and their strengths and weaknesses. Know all of that, and a wager is as good as won. The gold is already yours. Not always. Not always. Gol granted him that. No. But I'm not going to throw all of my coin into one single wager either. I'm more careful than that. Any loss will be absorbed. But you don't have to worry about any of that. If you want to be a part of this, you only have to do three things. Fight, win, and guard my bank. Can you do that?
Harm thought about it.
I think I can do two of those.
Really? I need to know if you are with me or not. This is what we both want. You want more than just fighting from season to season, and this is it. A chance to be part of something grander without having to bend your knee to any of the toppers ruling their own houses. You would be a founder of a house just by doing those things I asked. After that, anything more you can give is up to you. Chances like these don't often appear. They aren't commonplace.
I just turned down one of those chances.
To fight for another's house? To further their name?
You're smarter than that, Harm.
We're smarter than that. Not only that, think of the stab to the guts we will give them all if we do it. No one considers any free trained to be of worth to anyone, but they secretly think some of us are worth something. Think of how rankled the houses will be if we rise above them and prove them wrong. Just establishing a new house that will take in free trained and train them even further into champions. It can be done. That picture alone is enough to make me do whatever I can. I want the dogs to rise, Harm, to rise, and to latch on to the hands feeding them bloody scraps.
Harm stood before the Cree, thoughts swirling in his skull and settling on none. He rubbed his jaw and mouth, glaring at Gol, who returned it and waited. People passed them.
Can you do this?
Gol asked him.
If you don't think you can, I will find others who will.
Feeling the heat rise up his neck and into his face, the Jiberian screwed up his face and looked around. Could he do such a thing? It seemed insane, and to start on this road while the games were in progress? Then thoughts from another time entered his head. He was getting older, and after the games, he had nowhere else to go, no trade to fall back on. Like it or not, he was nothing outside of the arena. Just another brute with a blade going through the days like pitchers of cheap wine. Until he died. Or until he tossed a spear into the crowds and got dragged out of the arena on meat hooks. Harm sighed and locked gazes with the Cree.
All right.
To his surprise, Gol gave him a little satisfied smile.
Good.
He held out a closed fist. Harm considered the gesture and eventually pressed the hand with his own, almost pushing Gol over. The Cree righted himself on his crutches.
We have work to do,
Gol told him, and with that, he swung past Harm's bulky frame and got walking. Harm watched him for a moment, and then he followed. The pair of men walked off then, cutting through the masses and heading deeper into the city, while sunset burned the sky orange and the smells of cooking meats and spices hung in the air, thick enough to make them both long for just a taste. And from one side of the busy street, a man watched them go, and eventually followed. Chapter 10 Greybeard's name was Ball Grisholt, of the stable of Grisholt. And after leaving the gladiatorial chamber, he quietly fumed all the way back to his residence outside the walls of Sunja. He rode in the back of a brown coach, pulled by a team of four horses. Fancy red cloth decorated the cabin's interior, and Grisholt idly picked at cushioning worn with age, while looking out at the passing landscape. In his other hand was a bottle of Sunjan mead, and the drink did little to placate him. He measured the passing country with sips and glares, wanting it all to go up in flame. It wasn't often that Grisholt got into such a fury, but that fat, free-trained lout had gotten the best of him, in front of his lads, no less. And a Jiberian at that. Barbarians all, hardly worth his time,
but the insolence of the bastard stuck in his craw, like a meat hook. It was enough to brand the face of the one called Harm in his mind's eye. He'd instructed one of his men to stay behind and find out where the man slept, but Grisholt guessed the wretch probably slept in the pit's general quarters with the rest of the stray dogs. Still, he was going to make it his hobby to find out more about Harm of Siberia. Try as hard as he might, Grisholt didn't have a great selection of fighters in his stable this year. In fact, for 3 years now, Grisholt had struggled to keep his house in order and pay off his debts, all while cultivating what he hoped would be champion stock, or at least fashion a fighter notable enough to elevate his name in the arena circles. His father had much more success back in his day, yet times had changed. The competition had grown, become fiercer. His father's greatest fear when he was alive was actually living long enough to see what Borl would do with the stable. During some of their heated exchanges on the future of the family business, Borl had challenged the older man, vowing that he'd see. In the end, however, the older Grisholt died of a fever at 68, and he died quite right about his worries. Grisholt had taken over the stable, keeping the name intact when all others were changing theirs to houses. The first year was a good one. He didn't win an arena championship, yet he placed high enough that he didn't lose his standing in the rankings and almost got invited into the owner's viewing box, the place held in high esteem for all in the business. An average showing saw him slip in the rankings the following year, and from then on, it seemed Grisholt only barely managed to hold on. His fighters were average, the victories balanced by an equal number of losses, and his fortune dwindled. His taskmasters tried to prepare the fighters as best they could, but only so much could be done with the stock they possessed. Prized warriors got killed unexpectedly when Grisholt thought they would be the names with talent to win it all. He placed wagers on his own and others, consistently winning and losing enough to make him wonder enviously at how other managers did so well. What was he missing? There was coin to be had wagering on the free trained, but their mettle was spotty, unknown most times, and carried a high risk. It was better to wage coin on the house gladiators, whose abilities, weaknesses, and strengths were known, or could be learned. The coach bumped its way along the main road until it made a short turn. It rattled towards a walled compound, with its stony hide reared up against a small forest. Creepers veined the wall, almost completely hiding the red brick, while apple trees stood in front with crooked majesty. The weathered gates opened, and the hinges squealed, for Grisholt was unable to spare the grease. He knew two of his own gladiators manned the gates, as he could no longer afford the extra servants. The cook was a necessity, so Grisholt still employed one, but the rest were gone. He didn't even have any women serving him. The thought of Dark Courage having his way with the veritable harem at his beck made Grisholt's bile bubble. Then there was half-faced Gastillo with his golden mask and womanly hand towels. The image of him dabbing at that wreck of a mouth made Grisholt shake his head. After that came Nexus the winemaker, lowering himself to the level of the games just so he could see a bit of blood. Grisholt really didn't know much about the man personally, other than that he'd made all of his coin being a shrewd merchant of wine and other valuables, unlike Courage and Gastillo, who were both former gladiators. It wasn't so unbearable that a merchant owned a house of pit fighters, but what rankled him the most was that the man was rumored to press his beliefs that Courage and Gastillo didn't know what they were doing, and that it would only take a merchant with an astute sense of value and proven business skills to rule the games. Grisholt even heard from his spies that what truly annoyed the old guard was that Nexus was actually proving himself to be right. The coach door opened, and his one-eyed henchman, Brackus, stood waiting. Grisholt regarded the man for a moment. Powerfully built, he'd been one of the stable's prime fighters until one stroke from a blade robbed him of his left eye, ending his career. Though still as menacing as one of Saemon's underworld hellions, to send him into the pit crippled as he was would result in a loss. Still, The man stayed for merely lodgings and food and, in turn, served as a bodyguard, for which Grisholt could do no better. Bracchus had no problem slapping someone if ordered, or of his own volition. In fact, it wasn't a problem at all for him to start brutalizing someone. The problem lay in getting him to stop. Grisholt sighed and finished his sundgeon mead, gnashing his teeth as the last swallow went down. He got up, swayed slightly before grabbing the frame, and stepped down. Home again. When that weasel Caro arrives, bring him to me right away. Grisholt stroked his beard and moved inside his house. He considered walking about the open grounds and seeing how training was progressing, but at this point in time, with a bottle of mead in his system, he decided not to. If only he could afford the fire water. Yet the fabled alcohol was far too rich for him these desperate days. He ignored the places in his walls where the mortar crumbled, the dust collecting on the floors, and the cobwebs hanging in the corners, and proceeded to the wine cellar. Though he barely had enough gold to keep his head afloat, he did have the foresight to make certain that Marok, his cook, was also versed in wine and ale-making. Marok didn't have time to cultivate grapes, but ale was a different matter, and while apples grew about his property and could be pressed and fermented into cider, Grisholt could not afford the labor to harvest the fruit. Still simmering with dark thoughts, he went into the larder, found three sealed bottles on the shelves where Marok kept the finished drink, and took them all. From there, he wove his way through his household, knowing that the roof overhead leaked in places when it rained. He arrived at his study, which had once been his father's before him. Tomes of history and poetry filled the shelves, covering three walls. Not that he read any of it. History was depressing to recall, and poetry was simply painful. He wandered behind his desk and dropped into a large padded chair, the green cloth material every bit as frayed as everything else in the room. There he stayed, directly across from an oil painting depicting a small warship on a flat sea, steering into a sun being swallowed by the horizon. Grisholt knew he was drinking far more than he could afford, and staring at that painting far more than he should, as if it might reveal some sorcerous path to profits. Though his window, between a set of shelves, was shuttered closed, he could still hear the